Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, Scott McNulty, talk about a random episode of Star Trek with a decidedly non-random guest. This episode's guest is Ged Mayhew. Ged, thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself. How might people know you?
Probably from the Icon Factory, which is the site where me and my business partners do all kinds of designy things with pixels and icons. We've been around for a while designing icons for corporations and indie developers alike. And I have a blog too, getblog.com, and I'm on Twitter, which is just Gideon, G-E-D-E-O-N. So, and I'm older than dirt. So,
well, I'm not sure if that's true, but I will say that many of my Mac's hard drives have sported Star Trek spaceship, Starship icons from the Icon Factory.
Very nice, very nice. We've done a lot of them actually over the years, so that's pretty cool.
So tell me a little bit about, so you obviously, your company, and you design icons, and you have a large array of Star Trek and sci-fi in general related icons that you kind of give out for as free, which is great. But tell me a little bit about your interest in Star Trek. Are you a Star Trek fan?
Oh, yeah. I've been a Star Trek fan all my life, ever since I was old enough to watch TV, pretty much. And I didn't see the original series when it first ran. Not that old. But I did see it in syndication and reruns when I was a kid. And that was when I really started loving Star Trek. It was one of those shows that came on like late at night and then also in the afternoon when I was a boy. And along with Space 1999, Doctor Who, and a bunch of other sci-fi shows really kindled my love of science fiction, but mostly Star Trek. Star Trek was like the big one.
So do you have a favorite series of Star Trek?
That's such a loaded question.
You that's know? Why I asked it.
I know. It depends on the day of the week. Really, but this is actually something I want to ask you, if you would rate your Star Trek series in order of love to least. Mine would be, I thought about this a lot actually before we came on because I knew you were going to ask me something like this. Mine would be Deep Space Nine, the original series, Next Gen, Voyager, and Enterprise.
Interesting. Mine would be very similar. So it would be Deep Space Nine. Probably Next Gen next, because that's my first introduction to Star Trek was the original series, probably. But the first time I saw new Star Trek and I really got into Star Trek was the Next Generation. So that has a special place in my heart. Then the original series, Voyager and Enterprise.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that goes just to show like our age and when we were introduced to it. You know, I mean, the original series has a huge effect on me when I was a kid. And, I love Next Gen to death. I really do, you know, but there's like deficiencies in Next Gen in as far as storytelling and,
well, certainly, you know, the first few seasons.
Yeah. And it's that pushes it down, you know, not to say that that storytelling in the original series was better. It probably wasn't by any respect, but it's just the birth of Star Trek, you know, and all of those. You know, those things that we come to know and love about Star Trek, Kirk, Spock, McCoy, the Enterprise, the Federation, you know, and so it gets bumped up in my book a little bit.
It's amazing how well they stand up the test of time. I mean, certainly they are of their age, so there are some kind of awkward things that happen. But overall, they're kind of timeless. So that is a very special thing. I think you can take a first season episode of The Next Generation, and I'm not sure if it will stand the test of time. Later seasons, yes, maybe, but first season, kind of rough.
Yeah, I've been rewatching. I mean, I bought the first season. I had to buy it on Blu-ray of Next Gen, you know, just
someone
for the effects and
you.
Stuff. Yeah, I was just like, I want to show my support, obviously, because, you know, converting that all the HD and redoing all of the effects is a big, big, risky undertaking.
It's true. And they did an amazing job in the original series Blu-rays, which I assume you have.
Oh my God. The original series Blu-ray HD are wonderful.
It is gorgeous. And I love the way that they restored the special effects,
yep.
and they didn't do it in a way that made it flashy. They just kind of did it. Okay, these are the effects that they would have used if they could have.
Right.
So let's just kind of put them in. And they made the brilliant idea of you can turn off the enhanced special effects if you don't want them. If you want,
right,
to
you
see.
Can watch the original. Yeah, the original exactly. effects, which is the from top to bottom, those redos of the original series are some of the best I've ever seen of remastering of anything. They just did a great job. Some of them, like the Immunity Syndrome, just blown me away. The effects in that are just so good. And the Doomsday Machine and the Enterprise incident, they did a great job.
Go buy those if you don't have them, because they are well worth it. Well, if you don't have a Blu-ray player, I suppose you shouldn't buy them. But buy a Blu-ray player. I, in fact, bought a Blu-ray player so I could watch these Blu-rays.
They're worth it, in my opinion. They're totally worth it. If you're a Star Trek fan, worth every penny of it. I mean, I saw stuff in those episodes that I had never seen before because it was so clear.
And I should point out that if you watch them from streaming on Amazon, the original series, they are streaming the remastered versions with the additional special effects. But you obviously can't switch to the original if you are looking for the original. So get the Blu-rays.
Yeah.
Well, yes. And the Next Generation Blu-rays, I have those as well.
You have all seasons so far?
So my wife never knows what to get me for Christmas, so I don't buy them, and then I get them all for Christmas. So I have up to, they may have released one season more than I have, so I'm one season behind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I have three seasons of them on Blu-ray, and man, they're good too. There's some episodes that are really, really great, others are better than others, but I don't know if you've watched the one with what's the one with Kelsey Grammer with the time loop?
Oh, I can't think of the name of that one, but that's a really good episode.
Yeah. If you've not watched the commentary of that episode on the Blu-ray.
I have not.
Watch it. It's awesome. It's, it's Seth MacFarlane and Brennan Braga. And man, it's so great. Seth is such a huge Star Trek fan. He knows everything about Star Trek. I mean, literally everything. And it'd be like you sitting next to Brandon Braga or me, you know, watching an episode and just throwing out Star Trek questions. Why did you do this? What is this like? You know, how is this like working with so-and-so? You know, how did you do this effect? You know, blah, blah, blah. And he asked all the questions that I would ask or any Star Trek fan would ask. But he also breaks into these killer impersonations of Patrick Stewart from time to time. You know, while they're watching the episode, he just like Patrick Stewart will say a line and then Seth will repeat it as him. And it's hilariously awesome. It's great.
That sounds like a lot of fun. But we are not here to talk about various Blu-ray permutations of The Next Generation and the original series. We're here to talk about an episode from a series that may not get onto Blu-ray, but it might, who knows. Today's episode that we're going to talk about comes from Voyager, which was ranked, fourth on both of our lists. I'm sure the producers of Voyager are very happy that Enterprise came out and rescued Voyager from the depths of Star Trek hate. Although I don't hate Voyager. It was just not. It was a disappointment.
Yeah.
And the episode we're going to talk about is 1159 from Season 5, Episode 23. Now, before we get into it, your thoughts about Voyager.
I'm with you. Voyager isn't bad, but it's not awesome. I mean, it has its moments. There are some very awesome episodes of Voyager. And there are a lot of good character moments in Voyager. But overall, it's kind of just like, it's just kind of there.
I mean, it's a brilliant idea. The premise right. of the show is brilliant. I find that Voyager has the highest number of super annoying Star Trek characters. I find Neelix to be super annoying. I never liked Kes all that much. Harry Kim is one of my least favorite characters ever. I'm not thrilled with Tom Paris. And that's a large number of characters on one show not to like.
Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I love the Doctor.
Well, the Doctor is great.
The Doctor is like one of the best characters in all of Star Trek, in my opinion.
Yes, and when I was when Voyager came out at first, I was down on Captain Janeway mostly because I was a young man and she was a woman, and I was like, what the hell? Why is there a woman captain? But as I have grown older and matured, I have realized two things. A, Captain Janeway is a fantastic character, and B, Kate Mulgrew, who plays her, is a great actress. So I don't know what the heck I was thinking. But Captain Janeway is not the problem in Voyager, if you ask me.
No, she's not. Definitely not. She's one of the strongest parts of Voyager, actually. When she's written right. You yes. know, there are some deviations from, you know, her character that the writers take in some episodes that I totally cannot figure out to save my life. But when they're not doing that, she's like the star or the guiding, you know, thing in Voyager that keeps the show on track. And she was that in real life, too. In interviews, you know, the whole crew would say that they all look to Kate Mulgrew for inspiration, you know, on the daily grind in that show. She would come into work on time every day. She knew all her lines all the time, every day. You know, she never missed a beat, you know, everything. That it's just like incredible. She's like the consummate professional, evidently. And that shows in her character, I think, too.
All right. Well, luckily, this episode features Captain Janeway, kind of. This is, before we get into 11:59, I just want to say that I think this may be the strangest episode of Star Trek I have ever seen. Not because of what the story is weird or like weird things happen. Like there's some original series episodes that are super weird. But this feels like Voyager crash landed on a Hallmark movie, and right. They just went with it.
Yeah, definitely has that vibe, that touchy-feely vibe to it.
It's a very strange episode, and it starts off with Janeway's walking down the corridor, talking to Neelix about the Great Wall of China for no apparent reason. And Neelix wants to know who built it, why they built it. And this is one of my favorite characteristics of Janeway, is she doesn't really have time for fools. So she points out the obvious, that China built it to keep people out.
right.
And she does not disguise her annoyance with Neelix for asking these questions. And Neelix says a fact about how it's visible from orbit, which it's not, sadly. But that's a common misconception. And then we find out that Neelix and Tom Paris are engaged in some kind of weird trivia contest about who knows more about their home planets. And that keeps cropping up throughout the episode. Although we don't hear any Talaxian trivia questions. So
yeah.
It seems like Tom is not doing a great job on his end of the bargain. And that sparks Janeway to think about her past. And she says, well, hey, how about the Millennium Gate? Tell me what you know about the Millennium Gate, Neelix. And of course, Neelix knows what the Millennium Gate is. Apparently, it was this 1 kilometer tall, independent biodome kind of thing that was a self-sufficient city that was covered with solar panels, and people lived there and everybody was happy on Earth.
Right, and it was like the prototype or the pattern for the first Mars colonies or something like that, I think.
Yes. And Neelix is like, why did you ask about that? And so Janeway says, well, one of my ancestors, Shannon O'Donnell, was instrumental in building it. And in fact, the governor of Indiana, I think it is, invited her there so that she could work on the Millennium Gate. And then we switch very abruptly to who we think is Captain Janeway, but obviously it's not Captain Janeway, it's Shannon O'Donnell. In a broken-down car, which is decidedly not this private jet that Captain Janeway had just said she was flown in to Indiana for, dictating some kind of strange... not strange. She's dictating, I guess, her road... like a road diary about what she's done. And she... her car experiences the most cliched breakdown noises ever. and she... sees to her left, I guess, a sign for the Millennium Gate. She has to pull off into Portage Creek, which is the future home of the Millennium Gate. And that is the start of the episode, setting us up for a very strange episode of Voyager.
Yeah, it's basically a whole flashback episode.
Very little of it happens on Voyager. Very little of it has anything to do with science fiction whatsoever.
Yeah, it's almost like one of those, you know, those things that they call bottle episodes, mm-hmm. you know, where the whole episode or the whole story takes place on the ship to save money.
Right.
They do those every now and then so that they don't have to blow the budget on special effects and stuff. And even though it doesn't take place on Voyager, or most of it doesn't take place on Voyager, I would still consider this a bottle episode.
Well, because sure, it takes place in this Portage Creek, which is clearly some backlot somewhere,
right? The backlot that was also in those episodes of Deep Space Nine where Sisko was, you know, the guy in the past, and, you know, and any other dozens of Universal and Paramount, you know, shows. Yes.
You will recognize Portage Creek.
Yes, you will recognize it. Although I have to say, like, the interior of the bookstore and things.
They may have skimped on Portage Creek exteriors, but the interiors they did not skimp on. So we see Shannon driving into Portage Creek, and though it's 2000, very close to New Year's, but every car, I found this odd, and maybe you may not find this odd, but every car that they show is from the 70s for some reason.
Yeah.
Did you find that weird?
Yeah.
It was strange. So she gets into a minor fender bender, mostly so that they can show that she has no money and she has no insurance. And the guy who she hits doesn't seem that upset. He drives away. She asks someone who's walking down the street, hey, where can I find some food and someplace to stay? He's not very helpful, and he's kind of rude. He's like, you're not going to find any of that here. And then he walks away. And she's like, well, whatever. And then she notices all these out-of-business, we're closed signs going up. She's not sure what's going on. But there's only one place that is open, which is Alexandria Books. So she parks her car, gets in there. And this is where we see this great bookstore set that they must have spent a lot of money on, because it is fantastic.
Yeah, if it is a set, I could swear it had to be on location somewhere. They scouted an actual bookstore and went, because to build that set and stock it, that would be crazy. But maybe they did. You know, I don't know. Maybe it is a set.
It could have been on location. Either way, they either found a great bookstore, which I would like to go to if it's a real place.
Right.
Or they built a fantastic set, because this is the bookstore. A lot of action. Well, there's not a lot of action that actually happens in this episode, but most of the drama happens within the bookstore, which makes sense because it's such a great setting. And so the bookstore is owned by this old guy and a kid who Shannon, who is not Janeway but looks exactly like her, says, oh, I need some help because my car is busted and I'm cold and everything's closed. And so Henry, who owns the bookstore, at first is hesitant to help, but then he figures out that she's not a corporate hitman, foreshadowing. So he's like, okay, we'll give you some coffee, some decaf coffee, and warm you up and figure out how we can help with your car. And then this is what Shannon asks about, why are all the stores closed? And that gives Jason, who's the kid, who, I was doing some research, played the voice of Chip in Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, really?
A little fun fact for you people keeping track of fun facts at home. Talks about how they're building this Millennium Gate, which is this great thing. It's all about the future. They're raising the whole town, apparently, to build the Millennium Gate on, which I thought to myself, America is a big country.
Right.
And if you're going to build a self-sustaining city, do you really need to destroy a town and put it on there? And is the viewer supposed to be, whose side am I supposed to be on, right? Am I supposed to be like, hooray, let's raise this cute little town and build a giant skyscraper town? Or am I supposed to be like, no, we want to maintain our way of life? It was a little conflicting.
Well, that's probably the main problem with the episode is, you know, I mean, Janeway herself is forward looking and an explorer, and she's always going to the future. Mm-hmm. And the theme of this episode seems to be holding on to the past, or recognizing the past in your ancestors, in where you lived, you know, all of those themes. So the episode itself is in major confliction with itself, and right from the get-go. And it doesn't, it, you know, in my opinion, it's why it makes it one of the weaker episodes of Voyager. Yeah. It doesn't know what it wants to do. And I thought it was kind of clever, actually, though, that Shannon, you know, the character that Mulgrew plays is not Janeway's direct ancestor. Right. In that, you know, she's not the Janeway side. She's mm-hmm. her mother's side. You know, and she was the explorer. And the Janeway character, the Henry Janeway, is the past looking, the static, the let's settle down, let's mm-hmm. not go anywhere guy.
Right.
You know, which was, I mean, that part of it was interesting. You know, to show like how the two of them changed each other or influenced each other. You know, she brought this sense of adventure to the family, and he brought the sense of, you know, family
and knowledge and
right,
know,
exactly
valuing what you have, right?
Right.
Which I think is also exploration is a big part of Janeway's character, but also family, like you said, and making sure that everyone is taken care of and you appreciate what you have is also a big thing, because obviously, you know, they're stranded in the Delta Quadrant. They need to manage their resources and be careful with the crew. That's her job as captain. So,
right. But then there also too, there's like, and at the beginning of Voyager, the series, you know, we learn that Janeway is in a relationship with someone. His name is Mark, and she evidently feels very close to this person. We don't know if they're married. I never knew if they were married or just engaged or just boyfriend and girlfriend or what. And it's sad because very quickly in the span of the show, we don't hear about Mark anymore. And we don't really see the effects of losing him on her, you know? Mm-hmm. And I wish they had done more of that. The couple episodes where they mention him again, you know, but then at some point she just kind of gives up on him because she thinks he's given up on her. And I really wish they had explored that more, because I think that Janeway is a good enough character where they could do that kind of stuff.
I agree. They could give her a lot. Well, she has many layers, and that would have just added another layer to her. But they might have also been concerned that she's a strong female character, and they don't want her pining for her boyfriend
right.
in the Alpha Quadrant. So,
right. I'm sure that's why they did it, actually. Stuff. But, yeah.
But I could see both sides of that coin. But as Ged said, the big shocking reveal, which isn't all that shocking, is that the old guy is actually Henry Janeway. So we now know that this story is, in fact, going to be a love story between Shannon and Henry, one assumes. And so Shannon needs some money to get her car fixed. She doesn't have any money, as we found out. She notices that there are flyers around saying, "Save our downtown." And she says, "Oh, hey, Henry, I can help you get the word out." And Henry's like, "We don't need any help." She's like, "Well, I have this computer, and we could save so much time. We could email every computer within 100 miles.
Yeah, I love that line. Within 100 miles. Oh my!
I was like, that is so strange. First of all, you don't usually email computers. You email people.
People.
And yeah. You could email people around the globe. It could be anywhere. Don't limit yourself to 100 miles, Shannon. Think bigger.
Actually, you know, if I wanted to email people around me, I don't even know how I would actually do that.
Yeah, I'm not sure how she could get the emails of people in 100-mile radius.
Right.
But she seems quite certain of it. So, and I also, she has this laptop, and I couldn't tell what kind of laptop it was. And I dearly wanted to know what kind of laptop it was for no particular reason. But I don't know if you've noticed what it was.
No, I didn't. I couldn't tell either. We need that Blu-ray version of Voyager.
That's right. When they get that Blu-ray version, I'm getting it just so I can see what kind of laptop Shannon has. Is she a Mac? Is she a PC? I don't know. I couldn't see it. She's probably a PC.
Probably.
Yes. So Henry is a little resistant, but he says, "Okay, fine. We'll help you out, and I'll get your car fixed. You help us spread the word about how horrible this Millennium Gateway is." But apparently everyone else in town has sold out except for Henry. He's fighting the good fight. He will not sell his bookstore. This episode confuses me so much, because they spend a lot of time setting up that the whole town is shut down except for this bookstore. And then the next scene is that they go to this bustling bar which I assume was in another town because everything is shut down.
Right, right.
And they're having a drink and they're talking about, you know, Shannon's like, oh, you should be an explorer. And Henry's like, I'd rather live in the past. And then construction equipment comes by.
Yeah, I love that.
Which then you know that they're in the same town that they had, that everything shut down. But apparently the bookstore and the bar are open.
Right.
I guess the bar is open because it's around New Year's maybe. So he doesn't want to close, but he has sold out. This is what I'm assuming. It's never a good idea, never a good sign when I have to create elaborate reasons for things and episodes to happen.
Right.
But let's get a move on here because this episode, not that much happens, so we can quickly move on. So the trucks come by. Oh no, they're going to start ripping stuff down. Then the I guess the construction head or something is doing an interview with a local news person about how they're excited about the Millennium Gate, but if they can't get the whole town buy-in, they're going to have to move it someplace else. To which Henry Janeway takes the opportunity to look like a raving lunatic old man on the news, talking about how they shouldn't give up their past, and he's yelling at everybody. And it made me think of those Simpsons headline, Old Man Yells at Cloud.
Right, right.
Not the best way, perhaps, to get his point across, but he gets his point across. And then Shannon calms him down, walks Henry into the bookstore, and then Shannon and the construction guy lock eyes, and something's happening. We don't know what's happening between them, but something is going on. And then there's a really lovely scene with Shannon and Henry where they have dinner in Paris.
I love that scene. Yeah, that was great.
It was a great scene where basically he sets up a big picture book with scenes from Paris, and they have this lovely little meal. The meal itself confused me because apparently it was an apple and a piece of bread. But that aside, the scene was very nice. And they are clearly falling in love with each other. And Henry says, oh, by the way, your car's fixed. And so Shannon's like, well, I'm leaving then tomorrow morning. And he says, no, you have to show Jason, which is his son, some tricks on the computer. And so Shannon says, okay, I'll stay for another day. But that's it, because I gotta roll, man. I gotta roll.
You can't cage this bird.
That's right. Then we're back to Voyager, where Captain Janeway is talking to Seven of Nine. Actually, Captain Janeway is talking to Seven of Nine about the Millennium Gateway, Millennium Gate, and how she's trying to investigate more about her ancestors, Seven of Nine. As she often is confused why anyone would care about their ancestors. And Janeway explains the normal human thing of wanting to know where you come from and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she asks Seven of Nine to do some research for her because many of the records from that time period have been destroyed or scrambled up.
And so they were all on zip disks, evidently, and got lost.
They had the click of death or something.
In the great Eugenics Wars.
That's right. Well, the Eugenics Wars happened in the 90s, so it was, I guess, World War III that screwed up these records, which we can get back to at the end of the episode, because there are some... if you are a stickler for Star Trek timelines, there are some problems with this episode.
Right, right.
I am not, but I will point them out anyway. And so Seven of Nine's like, okay, I'll help you out. And so she's in the mess hall, looking through historical data. Tom Paris and Neelix walk in with their continuing, ooh, let's trade trivia, where Neelix is naming the Seven Wonders of the Ancient World. Seven of Nine is frustrated because she can't find more information for the captain. Neelix sits down and says, oh, why don't you try looking at more databases? And in 2 seconds, finds a bunch of information, including a picture of Shannon Janeway with her grandkids and children. To which Seven of Nine is like, why didn't I think of that? And I thought to myself, why didn't Seven of Nine think of that? Because she's very smart, and that's probably the first thing she would have tried, but be from me.
But this scene was also has the best line in the episode,
oh,
in
it my does. Opinion,
which is when Neelix was like, you know, Seven of Nine is like, well, I haven't ever considered my ancestors important or whatever. And he's like, And then she said something like, well, if I ever decide to procreate, and Neelix, she discounts it immediately. She's like, you know, she'll never have kids. And Neelix says something like, well, you never know. I wouldn't be so quick to discount it. You might want a little 7 of 9.5 running around. And I literally laughed out loud when he said that.
I do not like Neelix, but I did laugh out loud at that as well. So 1 point for Neelix.
It was great line. Little 7 of 9.5. I was just like, oh my God, that's hilarious.
And I enjoyed 7 of 9's reaction, which was a withering stare of death to Neelix.
Right.
So Neelix finds some stuff in a Ferengi database for whatever reason, shows this picture to Captain Janeway. Captain Janeway is very appreciative and says, oh, because this is another weird thing. Captain Janeway asks Neelix to download it and print it out for her, because apparently Captain Janeway does not know how to do this herself.
Yeah, right.
She's the captain of a starship. She's a science officer, but she cannot download a picture and print it out.
She can't be bothered.
Well, that's right. Maybe. Neelix isn't doing anything anyway, so he can run down to the Kinko's on Deck 3 and get a color copy of this for her. So then we're back to the past, where, so you kind of feel like they intersperse these Voyager things. And I was reading a little bit about the production of this episode, mm-hmm. and at first they didn't want any Voyager scenes whatsoever, which would have made it even stranger, I think. So they felt the need to include, about a third of the episode on Voyager, which I think was a good idea, even though the Voyager scenes, they aren't doing much, but it anchors the rest of the story to the characters that we know and care about, so it makes sense to me.
Yeah, it does make sense, and I think that it is like the one thing that changes the plot as it goes, because Janeway is slowly learning that her ancestor is not who she thought she was.
Right.
And we couldn't have that kind of recognition if we didn't cut back to Voyager, you know? That would have all been lost. So I think it was a good thing. But it did slow the overall – or it just chopped up the pacing
of
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we're back in the past with Shannon watching the interview on a TV in the bar because she's sad. The corporate guy who was being interviewed walks in, and we find out – he used to be PR for NASA, and Shannon was, in fact, an astronaut, but she washed out, so she didn't get to go on any missions, and all of her other classmates are having wonderful success, and basically he says, I know you don't have a job, I know you're broke, I'll give you a job as a consulting engineer on the Millennium Gate if you can get Janeway to sign and agree to sell his place to us. If you can't, well... it is implied that if she can't do that, she doesn't get the job. And then he basically storms out of the bar. Which is, I point that out because later, it's important. That's an important bit that I want to talk about later. And so the next morning, Shannon wakes up. She's had this dream about the moon landing. There's a little talk about, with Jason about the moon landing, and he's playing a game on her computer, but that doesn't matter. I don't know why they included any of that. Well, I guess they included it because Shannon then finds out that his mother is dead, and so Henry Janeway is on the market.
Right.
I guess, I assume that's why. And she asks Jason, hey, do you want to stay in the bookstore forever, or do you like the Millennium Gate? And he, Jason the kid, is a fan of the Millennium Gate. So there you go. Henry comes back with some supplies that he had to sneak in, which include... two newspapers and a stack of used books, so I'm not quite sure why he had to sneak them in, but he did. And this is where Shannon basically says, hey, you know, the Millennium Gate isn't all that bad. Why are you hiding in this bookstore? You need to get out some more. Maybe actually go to Paris instead of reading about Paris. Why don't you, you know, sign over? And Henry's like, what made you have this sudden change of position? Are you sleeping with the enemy? And she said, no, I'm not sleeping with the enemy. Maybe I'm having a beer with the enemy. And she tells him about how she's been offered this job, and if he signs, she gets the job, and if he doesn't, she won't. But that's not the reason she's doing it. She does think it would be better for him to live his life. He doesn't really take this well. And he tells her to get the hell out of here. And she does, basically, leave. But Jason is sad because he likes her.
Yeah, and again, it's confliction there because, I mean, I like the guy that plays Janeway. I like the Janeway character. I think the character is well written, and we can, of course, all relate to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't want our homes bulldozed. You know, we don't want who we are to be eliminated and covered up for something that's faceless and technology and all of that. But then he also stubbornly refuses to see her side of it too. I mean, he's totally like rooted where he is until like the very last moment, you know, and that is just strange.
It's very uneven. Yeah, he refuses to even think about it.
Right.
He won't even leave Ohio, Indiana, or wherever the hell they are. He won't leave the state.
Right. Yeah. He tells her that he's like, he'd never been outside of Indiana.
Yeah. So, I mean, I understand there are people who have not left their state. There's nothing wrong with that. But he has the opportunity. Maybe he could be a little more adventurous. So we're back on Voyager, where everybody is talking about their ancestors. And the whole point of this scene is that apparently Tom Paris has an encyclopedic knowledge of Mars mission personnel. So he knows everybody who's ever worked on any Mars mission from the 1970s on. So right. I'm not sure why they didn't just check with Tom first before looking through these difficult-to-sort-through records, because apparently Tom knows everybody. And so Janeway says, oh, do you know Shannon Donnell, or whatever the hell her name is? And he's like, no. So she's never worked on any Mars missions. And so Captain Janeway takes this as gospel and is very sad and confused because she thinks, well, my ancestor is not who I thought she was because Tom Paris is not aware of her. Which I find strange, but I understand they just needed to short-circuit the whole, research thing. So she finds out, she's not an astronaut, she's not this explorer I thought she was. So I don't really care about her anymore. And she talks about, she has this nice scene with Chakotay about how history will remember them, because she's having so much trouble figuring out what happened a couple hundred years ago. And I thought that was cute.
Which is probably the truth, though. It was a nice little scene. He's like, I mean, it's just the context of it is a nice interplay of like, okay, we're in the future, but still in the distant future, no one's going to remember this, or they're going to recount it completely differently.
Right. There'll be a holographic engineer and Chakotay will be the captain.
Right. Exactly.
They'll get stuff wrong. As history always does.
Right.
And so she tells Chakotay, well, you know, Shannon wasn't who I thought she was. She was a consulting engineer, but she wasn't like the lead project lead, and she didn't do all the cool things I thought. And Chakotay says, well, you know, she still was an important part of your life, so it's not that big a deal. And Janeway says, oh, don't worry, I'm not worried about myself, but how am I going to break the news to my family that this person is not who we thought she was?
And the thing is here, though, that her family probably already knew that, you know, and they told the story differently to Catherine, you know. I mean, of course, your family members always bolster up each other in their recountings of things, you know. So when my Aunt Martha told young Catherine the story of the Millennium Gate and everything, she probably assigned her, you know, a position of more importance than she really had, you know, and everything. But that's only natural. All families do that all the time, you know.
And it was probably to encourage the young Catherine to do great things and be an explorer. And that worked out marvelously.
Right. Well, that was all part of the plan, you know.
She's a Starfleet captain. That's a pretty good thing.
Right.
Even though they're stranded in the Delta Quadrant. But still, that's not her fault. And so Janeway's a little sad, but she's covering it up. And so we go back to the past to finish up our story about the Millennium Gate. It's 3 hours before the deadline, and Shannon and Moss, who I guess is the guy, Shannon and the PR guy, are watching Action News in the local bar, and the PR guy's like, well, I guess he's not going to sign. And Shannon says, well, I don't think he's going to sign. And this is the point at which he says, well, we never would have approached you if we didn't think you were qualified for the job anyway. So if you're still interested, go to Ohio, where our backup site is, and we'll give you a job there. Which I found very confusing, because it seemed pretty clear the first time he offered her the job that it was only because she might be able to get Janeway to sign away his bookstore. But he changes his tune very quickly. I don't know why. It was weird. But for the story, I know why, because now Shannon has a reason to leave this little town, because she has a job in Ohio waiting for her.
And she's going to try to get Henry and Jason or whatever his name was to go, you know?
Yes. So she says, you guys could come with me. You don't have to stay here. We could, you know, have an adventure. And Henry's like, I don't think I'm going to do that. And so Henry and Shannon have this big fight. And she says, fine, I'm leaving right now. And so she leaves. She drives away, leaves Portage Creek. Stops and gets herself a chocolate chip cookie. She starts dictating in her audio diary, bites into her cookie, and then decides to turn around.
Yeah, and I actually like that part when she was recounting to him why she came back, and it was because of the cookies.
Yes.
You know.
So she comes back and tells him, I came back because I usually buy this cookie. Every time I get on the highway, I buy a cookie to treat myself. And it's, you know, a marvelous thing. I did it this time, and the cookie did not taste good. I could only think about how much better it would be if I were eating a cookie with you. So I came back. And that was very nice. And so she did come back. And she basically convinces Henry to sell his bookstore at the last minute to the developer. And hooray, everybody celebrates, because the town's going to be destroyed and the Millennium Gate's going to be built, which I'm very confused about this message, but everybody's happy, so I guess I shouldn't be confused. Everyone is happy, that is, until we cut to Voyager, where we find Catherine Janeway laying in her bed or on a couch or something, looking out of a window. I guess it's a porthole because they're on a ship, wistfully, clearly a little sad because her ancestor is not all that she thought she was. She gets a message from Neelix that says, hey, come to the mess hall. I need to talk to you. Janeway's like, fine. She goes to the mess hall. Surprise, it's not just Neelix. It's everybody. Everybody's there so that they can celebrate Ancestor's Eve, which is apparently a holiday Neelix made up that happens on April 22nd, so you can remember your ancestors. And everybody thinks this is a fantastic idea. Although I'm not sure why it's called Ancestor's Eve. Couldn't it be called Ancestor's Day? Usually in holidays, if it's an eve, it's the day before the actual holiday. But that is nitpicky. So they give her a framed picture of Shannon O'Donnell. And Janeway's like, oh, thank you, everybody. They take a picture because the doctor is a holographic photography fanatic.
A holophile,
that's right. And then the last scene of the show is they zoom in on the picture, and it comes to life, and it's like 2 seconds of the old Shannon O'Donnell, with her relatives doing stuff. I don't know what they're doing. They're just sitting there. And then the episode's over.
Yeah, and
and it confuses me still.
It does. I mean, it's definitely one of the weaker episodes of Voyager for a number of reasons, but this is one of those times when I was talking about earlier where Janeway does things that I think that are outside of her character. Mm. And the whole last bit with her being upset or disappointed, I think is the wrong way to handle that scene. The writers should have totally written that and have her discovered something, or the crew discovered something about her ancestor. Like, you know, she went on to do this and this, you know, or her children went to Mars, or, you know, did this and this, you know, something that she could then, discover about her ancestors that would give her reconfidence in them, because she totally ends the episode upset at Shannon.
It's true, because Shannon was not this amazing astronaut, entrepreneur, Mars trail blazer.
Right. There's nothing in Janeway's characters that would say that that would upset her.
Well, Ked, thank you, A, for watching this episode. And I apologize that this was the random one that got chosen, but such is the nature of Random Trek. And thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Thanks for having me. I'll talk about Star Trek any day of the week, good or bad. So I completely enjoyed it. It's always fascinating to talk about these characters, and I love to hear how everyone, especially you, like or dislike parts of Star Trek.
Well, I will take you up on it, because I'm sure I will ask you to come back. And great. Hopefully, maybe we'll watch an Enterprise episode.
No. How about a good episode? Keep picking them out of the hat until you get to a great one, and then call me.
And I have no ending, so now we're done. That's it. Next on Random Trek, The Next Generation's Conspiracy.